everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this episode, we're going to talk about a few things. Kind of a all things comics episode, if you will. Manny's going to fill us in on his latest convention that he attended. That would be Heroes and Villains in San Jose, California. We're also going to talk about the state of the DC Rebirth. This Wednesday, August 31st, was a fifth Wednesday. That means there were five Wednesdays in the month of August. So, traditionally in the past, when DC had the triangle era of the Superman books, for example, there were four Superman books that would come out. So, one a week each month. But then on those odd months in the year, those 4 months that had five Wednesdays, there would be no Superman book. So they started doing the Superman Man of Tomorrow, which was a quarterly book. So it only came out those 4 times, those 4 extra Wednesdays. And so ever since then, DC's had this kind of tradition of using those weeks, that fifth Wednesday in a month week, to kind of catch up on either books that are late, or they put out specials or annuals or that kind of thing. It's not really a heavy week for the publisher traditionally. And so there's no change in that strategy, so to speak. This is the second month we've seen since the DC Rebirth initiative has started that's had five Wednesdays. And just like the first time it happened, there were no official DC Rebirth books released. So, as I said, kind of a chance for them to play catch up. What does happen in these weeks, as we've seen, DC has been kind of kicking Marvel's butt recently as far as sales. So this week's the top selling books are going to be Marvel books, most likely, just because there's not a lot of DC content out there. So we figured we'd take the opportunity, with no new Rebirth books coming out, to go through the list of DC Rebirth titles that have been released so far and just talk about whether, based on what we've seen so far, whether we're in, we're out, or we're still playing a wait-and-see game. We're also going to talk about some of the books we've read recently that have stood out in our minds. So, but let's hear first about your trip, man. How was Heroes and Villains? Was this the first Heroes and Villains in San Jose?
Actually, it's the second. Last year was the first.
I don't remember hearing about it last year, but I definitely heard some hype this year. How was the show overall?
You know, we talked about it on our last podcast a little bit, how, you know, it's a lot of almost like a money grab type show where you almost guarantee certain celebrities certain amounts of dollars and whatnot. And to a certain degree, that's what it was. But man, I was surprised at how good that show was. The amount of people, celebrities that they had there was amazing. I mean, from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they had Chloe Bennett and Clark Gregg. From Arrow, they had Stephen Amell, John Barrowman, David Ramsey, Colin Donnell, Katie Cassidy, Willa Holland, Paul Blackthorne, Charlotte Ross, Echo Kellum, Katrina Law, and Amy Kumanik. And then from The Flash, they had Robbie Amell, Candace Patton, Rick Cosnett, and Teddy Sears. And then from Legends of Tomorrow, Brandon Routh was there, Katie Lotz, Jonathan, I think his last name is pronounced Siege. He's the one who played Jonah Hex. And then Sierra Renee. And, I mean, there's still a ton more people that were there. Michael Rooker was there. And Chandler Riggs from The Walking Dead. So there was a lot of people to see. And what I noticed is that money was not an issue for the people there. All the people who were there were excited just at the fact that they had the opportunity to interact with their favorite stars from their favorite shows. Everybody was in a very, very, it was it was different in the sense that with as many conventions that I've been to, I can definitely see a difference in people's attitudes. It was a lot more, everyone was a little bit more relaxed than what I've noticed at other shows. And it maybe had to do with the way that it was also laid out. Everything was really well spread out. The floors were huge, even though that they didn't have that many things. The photo ops that they offered were in a separate room altogether. So at times it even seemed like the floor was kind of empty because everybody was all spread out, including for the panels. They were off to the side. So there wasn't anywhere really on the floor that looked too congested, but there was definitely a lot of people. And what I noticed too was so many people, not only did they pay for just their entrance, but they had upgraded their passes to like VIP passes for like 2 days, which alone was like $220 to do for the 2 days. And that didn't include any photo ops or autographs, anything that just got you through lines faster. People were getting multiple photos with celebrities, multiple like selfies at tables, autographs. They had their own memorabilia to get signed, and they were taking gifts to people. So it was very upbeat. It was very different. It was really fun. I decided to get in on the whole experience. And if you follow me on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, you know that Kate's favorite character on Arrow and also on Legends. So I took the opportunity to get my pop figure signed of Black Canary, and also to meet her, talk to her for a few minutes, and take some photos with her. So really cool. I mean, I can definitely see why, how you can spend a little bit of money to spend a few minutes with some of the celebrities that you're used to seeing every week on your couch. I mean, when else are you going to get an opportunity like this? I can kind of see now why they can charge so much, because people don't really care. If they're fans of the show, they will pay, and that's what I noticed. So overall, it was a really good show. There's another podcast I love listening to. What is it? The Comic Conspiracy? No, what is it called? It's part of the Geek Box, and Ryan Higgins. He's an owner of a comic shop in the Bay Area. I got to meet him, and he was telling me about his experiences last year at Heroes and this one, and telling me how much of a better show it was this year. And then the panels were pretty cool. They kept the general questions at a minimum. It was a lot more fan questions. And one of the cool things you found out that some of the other cast members didn't even know, for example, was Rick Cosnett. He played Eddie Thawne in The Flash. He was originally cast actually as Jay Garrick. And so he was, you get little facts like that. Robbie Amell was really cool at the panels. Funny. It's definitely a show that if you haven't been to, it is definitely worth checking out. And I myself will be back next year, and it'll be a little bit more prepared too.
Where was it held at?
This one was held in San Jose at the Convention Center.
So the same place that they've had Big Wow in the past. That is a big convention center.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, they spread it out really far across that. Even I thought that either there was going to be a ton of people, or it was just going to look bare. But I think they make it that way so that you're not, really stressed out about standing in the line. Even the bigger names, Stephen Amell, and Clark Gregg, who had really long lines. It went by pretty quick because they The photo ops, you had to go to on a specific time, so, or the panels, so you had a large group of people in different parts of the rooms at different times, so it really spread everybody else very well. I think part of the thing is also that, like at comic book conventions, sometimes if you see like a signing, you're not necessarily there to see that person specifically. You're more there for, oh, look, there's a line, there's a celebrity signing, let's get in line. I mean, how many times have we been asked, hey, who's that signing, or where's he from? And they just get in line for no reason. So it really, I guess one way to put it is, you know, it cuts the fat a little bit off and just really gets to the meat of the celebrity's fans, and allows you that opportunity to spend a little bit more time than I've seen at other shows.
Was there any publishers there?
No publishers.
But were there vendors selling comics?
There's a few. There's a ton of pops, a lot of like local artists, not a lot of comics. Very, very few comics, now that I recall. A lot of toys and action figures. The show really, really just revolved around all the celebrities that were there. Even the cosplayers, I noticed that there weren't as many until later in the afternoon. And even then, it still wasn't as many as I'm used to seeing at other shows.
Interesting. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit of DC Rebirth. So... we'll kick off with Batman. The first arc, I think there's one story left, or one... I mean, we've kind of had almost the climax already. We know this next issue is going to give us kind of the background, the secret origin of Gotham and Gotham Girl. And that final book of the first arc comes out next Wednesday, so September 7th. For me, I didn't know what to expect. You know, Scott Snyder's run on Batman was obviously very well received, both by the fans and the critics. And honestly, I didn't read every issue of Snyder's, but I kind of drifted in and out. I thought it was well done, but I also thought at times that his story arcs tended to go on a little bit longer than maybe should have in my mind, particularly Zero Year. But so far, I'm loving what Tom King's bringing to the book. And it's David Finch, as far as art goes, it's David Finch on Batman. I mean, that's awesome. And, you know, the other side of that, the other artist is Mikhail Yanin. We haven't seen his work on it yet. I imagine he'll be doing arc number two, while Finch, you know, already starts working on arc number three. Most likely they're going to rotate arcs. And I love Mikhail Yanin's art, and I cannot wait to see him on Batman on a regular basis. So, I'm totally in on Batman. I'm definitely going to be picking it up each week, or every 2 weeks, I guess I should say. How about you, being a huge Batman fan?
You know, I was real skeptical in the beginning how big of a fan I was of a lot of Snyder's work on the book. Not that big of a fan on the last arc, but it was still good. And because of, I guess, his runs on it, I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. So, but then talking with Tom King at WonderCon, I just happened to run into him when we were able to just talk to him on the floor. And then also reading it, it's really good. I'm definitely still in. The last issue four was amazing. I really liked it, and so even though I'm still not too sold on Gotham and Gotham Girl, I love this Batman. It's great, and I definitely love the art. So yeah, it would take a lot for me to drop a Batman book.
All right. Next up on the list is Detective Comics. I have to admit that when I first heard about this book, Well, actually, when I first heard about it, I didn't even know what I was hearing about. I had interviewed James Tynan at Long Beach Comic Expo in February. Said he had something coming down the line that was going to just blow my mind. And he was really excited about it. Come to find out, it was Detective Comics. So when he made the announcement at WonderCon, I was super excited. You know, I heard Batman Team Book, I heard Batman Boot Camp, and I kind of had certain expectations, and I was very excited. And then the book started, and it actually had much less of Batman than I expected, and even the Batman that it had, it was kind of in a different way. I guess I just heard Batman Boot Camp, and I thought of Batman training people. And really, this book has been more about Batman trying to protect these other members of the Bat family, while Batwoman has been doing the training. That's not to say it hasn't been good. It just hasn't quite been what I've expected, but I've definitely been enjoying it so far. And a lot of the art has been by Alvaro Martinez, and it's been really excellent. Sometimes just outstanding, other times not quite as good, maybe, but certainly above average. So the artwork has been just a little bit inconsistent, but that notwithstanding, I've been enjoying the book so far. It's probably not my strongest book. Like, I'm not like, yes, Detective Comics, I'm definitely in on that one. But I'm certainly going to finish the first arc, and I'm curious to see what the second arc does, see if it shifts focus at all. So for now, I'm still in on Detective Comics, at least through the first arc and into the second.
What are your thoughts on that? It's been a really good story, and I didn't know how well the characters were all going to gel together. You have Spoiler, you have, especially with Clayface, Red Robin, but with Batwoman as their leader, I've really liked what she's brought to the book, and it's worked for me. Some of these characters I'm a little bit invested in due to, you know, Batman Eternal and Batman and Robin Eternal. So, it's been very good for me. I wasn't too high on it in the beginning, but I've enjoyed it enough where, I'm still on board.
All right, next up we have Batgirl. So this is the book by Hope Larson, which basically takes place immediately following the storyline that's been, or that was going on in the previous Batgirl title by Brendan Fletcher, Cameron Stewart, and Babs Tarr. She's kind of, for lack of a better term, gone on walkabout in Asia, kind of discovering herself. And I find the idea interesting, but from Raphael Albuquerque on art, I've never read that much of his... I've never read that much of a title that he's worked on, really. You know, like, I've never read American Vampire. You know, I've seen some of his artwork from there. Obviously, it's a much different tone, a much different feel. That book's a horror title, much darker. So I find the art to be okay. You know, I'm not the biggest Albuquerque fan. But for me, I think I'm out on Batgirl. I find the idea more interesting than the actual execution of the book. I just feel like it's probably aimed at a little bit different audience than me. I think it's more aimed at a younger audience. And I think that Hope Larson taps into something that probably female readers enjoy more than I would necessarily. So it might be something I revisit later on, or it might be something I might enjoy reading more as a trade. But as far as reading it on a weekly basis or a bi-weekly basis, is this a monthly? I think this might be one of their monthlies, right? Is Batgirl monthly?
I think so.
I'm pretty sure it is, yeah. So for me, I'm out on Batgirl. What about you?
I was never really in on Batgirl, and the fact that she's in Asia didn't really help the cause either. Something about sometimes having our heroes being abroad just doesn't interest me very much. So I really have no much to say about this because I read the first one. I still haven't read the second one. So, yeah, I'm out too.
All right, next up we have Batgirl and the Birds of Prey. So this is the book being written by Julie Benson and Shauna Benson, art by Claire Rowe. First, I'll just touch on the art. I haven't seen Claire Rowe do comic work before. That's not to say she hasn't. I'm just not familiar with her work at all. That being said, to see this her work on a big two book, it's pretty dang good. I'm kind of impressed by her, the quality of her work so far, and I feel like I saw some improvement just from the Rebirth issue to the first issue. So if I continue to see that level of improvement, I'll be very pleased. As far as the story itself, so this is basically, it's going to take place after the Batgirl book. Like, Barbara Gordon has come back, whether it's after the first arc of the Batgirl book or how long Barbara Gordon, Batgirl, will be out of the country rediscovering herself, we don't know at this point. But as far as these first arcs, the first arc of Batgirl and the Birds of Prey definitely takes place after the events of Batgirl. I love what the Benson sisters are doing. The first issue of Batgirl and the Birds of Prey improved even upon what they did in the Rebirth title. I love the little humor and the little kind of jokes they drop in, even with describing the settings. It's very tongue-in-cheek. It very much suits my sense of humor. And it's just a really, really good book. I mean, you just heard me say that Batgirl's really not my cup of tea. And that being said, here's these two writers, these sisters, writing the book, and I'm loving it, even though it's not necessarily a character I enjoy. And I, as much of a fan of Batgirl, I'm even a less of a fan of Black Canary. So you put Batgirl and Black Canary in a book, you know, my first reaction is going to be, I'm not going to buy this book because I'm not going to enjoy it. That's how good the book has been for the first two issues. That's what an incredible job these two sisters have done. That I am, despite the fact that these aren't my favorite characters, the book is just so well done that I'm in. The storyline that they've launched the book with, about Barbara trying to find out who's using her former Oracle identity to supply information to the underworld. She's not going to let that stand. I'm very curious to know who this Foracle is, as they've dubbed her or him. And I'm in on this book, at least through the first arc. It's been high quality for sure. What about you?
You know, I didn't have too much going into this one, just like the Batgirl book. But man, the difference in the setting and the writers, like kind of like what you talked about, it's made a whole difference. And I'm a lot more curious about this storyline. I want to know who's the one antagonizing Barbara. And unlike you, I do kind of like Black Canary. Not big of a fan of Huntress. So I'm still in. I want to know a little bit more. I'm interested in the story. The art was good. I had a chance to talk to the colorist a few weeks ago, and he was very high on this book as well. So, yeah, I'm still in. I really want to know who's this other Oracle that they're trying to find.
Yeah, that colorist would be Alan Passalacqua.
Yeah, he's really cool. He's also working on Archer and Armstrong. So
yeah, never pass up a chance to say his name because I love the way it sounds. Passalacqua.
Yeah.
All right. Next up on the list, we have Nightwing, Tim Seeley, and I believe the art's by Juan Fernandez. The art, it's not my favorite. It's not real clean. You know, I prefer much cleaner lines. This is a bit frenetic and a little more on the sketchy style of things. So the art has been okay. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about this one. Again, I'm not. I've loved the Grayson book so much, and I feel like, you know, Tim Seeley was one of the co-writers on that book along with Tom King, and so I feel like they're bringing a lot of that sensibility to Nightwing, And I think if Mikkel Janin was drawing it like he did Grayson, I probably would be in for sure. But I don't know. I mean, it's not to say the art is bad. It just, there's just something about the book that, I don't want to say it's off-putting, but it just, it hasn't hooked me. I love Raptor as a character. That's probably been my favorite part of the series so far. So, I'm just not sure. I'm just not sure on Nightwing. I think I'm leaning toward being out, but I may finish up the first story arc, to see where it goes, or this might be one that I pick up and trade. So I'm going to say for now, I'm in on Nightwing, but just, I mean, I have one foot out the door. I'll put it that way.
I was losing interest on Nightwing until they introduced Raptor. I really like this character. Not to say I don't really like Nightwing that much, but I wasn't really interested in the where they were going with it. But for me, at least, Raptor's character is what has kept me in. So, kind of like you, I have one foot in and one foot out. So, it's just a matter of let's see what happens.
All right, next up is All-Star Batman. We've only seen one issue so far. And if you would have asked me before the book started, I would have probably said, not that interested. You know, it's Scott Snyder writing Batman. We've seen that before. And not to say it's not quality. And, you know, it's a who's who of all, kind of all-star artists. But for whatever reason, artists whose styles that I don't necessarily enjoy that much, John Romita Jr., Jock, Sean Gordon Murphy, it's just, I don't know, all of them, none of them have like this really, the clean kind of style and that I prefer. All that being said, I thought the art in the first issue by Romita was some of the best Romita art I've seen in 20 years. The story was, you know, we kind of knew what the idea of the story was. You know, Batman's trying to take Two-Face from point A to point B. The changes that Snyder has made to Two-Face, I don't know that they necessarily make sense looking back over the character's history, but honestly, it's so interesting, and the first issue was so well done, I really don't care about that. I just want a good story, and Snyder delivered that in spades. There were so many awesome, like, character moments for Batman and for some of the C-list villains in the first issue. Plus, that's not even to mention that on the last page of issue one, Gentleman Ghost appears. I'm going to get to see Gentleman Ghost fight Batman. How am I not in? I'm totally in on All-Star Batman.
Yeah, it was so good. Scott Snyder, Batman, I was in from the beginning. But yeah, I didn't expect it to be that entertaining that fast. It's just go from the very first few panels when he crashes through that diner to the end where now we're looking forward to, like you said, seeing Gentleman Ghost. It's so good. And then they got a couple little twists in there with Alfred that I really like too. I was a little skeptical on the Romita art because of what happened during the Superman run and also that variant cover for the Justice League book, the last one that they did for Darkseid War. I thought that was so bad. But overall, I really enjoyed it. So, of course, still in on All-Star Batman.
All right, next up we have Action Comics. It's Dan Jurgens writing his Superman. So, yes, I am still in. That being said, we've had, what, 6 issues so far, I think? I'm ready for the... I'm ready to get some answers. I've said this before, but it's the story's kind of gone on long enough now that, and I think in the next issue we're going to get a lot of the answers that we've been looking for. But basically, the whole story so far has been Superman and Lex Luthor, Superman fighting Doomsday, like the whole time. We haven't really, I think 5 issues actually have come out so far. So I'm ready for, you know, to kind of wrap this up. And I'm curious to know where it's going to go from here. The art, we've seen art from Tyler Kirkham and Steven Segovia, mostly on the book so far. The Kirkham art has been outstanding. Sokovia art has been good as well. So still in on Action Comics. I love the dynamic between Superman and Jonathan Kent. It's more evident in the Superman title than the Action Comics title. But so far, I'm enjoying what Dan Jurgens is doing on the book, and I expect these kind of epic storylines to continue. If there's been anything I would say negative about the book, it's just the pacing so far. You know, being that it's a bi-weekly book, I kind of would have expected to be a little further and have a few more answers. So it'll be interesting to see going forward if the Jurgens kind of hits his stride and the pace of the story kind of changes a little bit, because I feel like for the amount of issues we've had so far, it's been paced a little slowly, I'll say. But this is going to be the first book to ever hit 1,000. So I definitely am curious to see how the action and the stories and the subplots and such ramp up toward that. Because, you know, that issue 1,000 is going to be an amazing, you know, never before seen craziness that DC's going to do. So what are your thoughts on Action?
Well, you know that before Rebirth, I wasn't too high on Superman books in general. So when I got Action, I was very, very surprised at how entertained I was by the action with Doomsday, and also the dynamic of having not only pre-Flashpoint Superman, but also post Darkseid War Lex Luthor fighting side by side, reluctantly, but fighting side by side. So I was in at that time. Now I kind of have a foot out the door, just because of the fact that it's getting old. And like you said, I need answers soon, and I'm ready for this to move on, move forward. That's really the only thing keeping me, like wanting to drop it is that the pacing, I'm not too fond of it. I needed to move a little bit faster.
All right. Fair enough. Next up, we have the Superman title. Patrick Gleason, Peter J. Tomasi, same situation, you know, a Superman that's the pre-Flashpoint Superman. This one much more focused on the family, Lois Lane and John Kent. And especially if Jorge Jimenez keeps doing the art, I'm definitely in. We've seen Patrick Gleason do some of the art as well. But man, I love when Jorge Jimenez draws this new version of Superboy. So up until the last issue was the Moonbase issue, which was really, really awesome, going up against the Eradicator. The issue before that was probably my least favorite. Just felt kind of weird, like it bounced from Smallville to Metropolis real briefly, and then to the moon. And so they introduced Bibbo, who was a supporting character in the Jurgens 90s run for a long time, and it just felt, I don't know, that felt weird. It felt kind of out of place going from Smallville to Metropolis to the moon. I feel like it should have just gone from Smallville to the moon. It a little bit of a disconnect, feeling a little choppy in that one issue. But a small bump in the road. I think, like, overall, I've enjoyed the Superman title just slightly more than I've enjoyed Action. But it's definitely more of an emotional book, whereas the Action Comics is book, for me, has been kind of like a big summer blockbuster, bubblegum kind of popcorn movie. Superman has been, the Superman title has been a little more cerebral, a little more emotional. So I've really enjoyed that. So I'm in on Superman with no reservation going forward for sure.
No, I agree with you. I'm all in on Superman too. I love the relationship between Clark and Jonathan, and I'm really excited to see him in his own book with Damian in the near future. Just the interaction has been so good. I love the scene with Jonathan looking out the window while his dad's meeting with Batman and Wonder Woman. I thought that was really good. I'm not sure how I feel about the Eradicator, though. I've
Yeah, I'm hoping we've seen the last of him, at least for a long while.
Yeah, I really hope so. But I think maybe they should use somebody else. But overall, still a solid book, and I'm definitely still in.
All right, next up we have Wonder Woman. Probably one of the books I was most excited for, and it hasn't let me down. The art, both from Liam Sharp and Nicola Scott, has been, without a doubt, the best art of the whole Rebirth from both of them. It's just absolutely amazing, gorgeous, really transcends the comic book page into fine art for me. I mean, it's just absolutely stunning. You know, their styles are very different, but they're so detailed. Nicola's pages are so warm and so inviting and so emotional. And Liam's stuff is just, like I said, just absolutely beautiful. Look, you know, so has such a fine art feel to me. I mean, this is stuff that should be like hanging on the wall, the walls of galleries. It's just phenomenal, phenomenal work. And to go along with that, the two stories that Greg Rucka has been telling, just amazing. I'm loving, loving, loving this book so far. Probably the most high quality book that DC is putting out, from the Rebirth Initiative, from top to bottom, complete story, amazing art, just, you know, no brainer to keep reading this book for sure.
Yeah, that's a definitely easy answer for me too. Wonder Woman is definitely my favorite book out of the Rebirth so far. Like we've talked about in podcasts before, or when we review the book, you can almost read the books without reading the writing. The artwork is done so well by both Liam and Nicola, that you can just look at the pictures, the panels, and understand what's going on, even to the point where you can understand the emotion of some of the characters. And then you add the great writing from Greg Rucka, and I mean, it's just a masterpiece of a book. And it's weird because it's one book, but it's two stories. But that's also what makes it so good, because we're getting the year one story of Wonder Woman, and at the same time trying to figure out what's the truth behind her origin. And it takes her back to one of her oldest friends and nemesis, Cheetah. So yeah, definitely in on Wonder Woman, and it's one I look forward to every other week.
All right, next up we have New Superman, Jean Yang, Victor Bogdanovic. This one I kind of have mixed feelings about. Jean Yang's a great writer. Victor Bogdanovic is probably an up-and-coming artist, maybe one of my favorite artists from the past few years who's started to work for the big two. Richard Friend on Inks, who's a friend of the show. But the first two issues haven't really hooked me. So I don't know, this might be one that I kind of let slide and then check back in from time to time. But I think I'm going to give it one more issue to kind of see, because the last issue kind of ended on not necessarily a cliffhanger, but Kenan Kong, the main character, does something that's very interesting, and so I'm curious to see what the reaction is going forward from that. And so based on the next issue, I'll probably make my decision whether to hang with it or be out on it. So I guess for now, I'm tentatively in pending the next issue.
Well, I was never really in to begin with. I just wanted to give it a shot. I mean, it's hard enough for me to follow just regular Superman, let alone a whole new Superman. So, yeah, I'm out.
All right, next up we have Superwoman. This was a book I was really, really, really excited for. Lois Lane as a superhero with superpowers. And then based on what happened on the first issue, and all the backlash, has DC really done it to Lois Lane again? You know, I don't know. I want to think no, but at the same time, you know, a lot of people have done some research on the future solicits and what's going on. And if it turns out that this is a Lana Lang book, and not a Lois Lane book. And it's not super women, but it remains super woman, and that super woman is Lana Lang, then I'm out. It's not to say that I don't enjoy Lana Lang as a character, but, you know, this was kind of marketed as a Lois Lane book, and that's what I was looking forward to reading. And, you know, not that I begrudge DC or feel tricked or anything, you know, it's comics, things happen. And maybe it was always their intention for this to be a Lana Lang book, and if that's, you know, what it is, and that's fine. It's just it's not what I wanted. So unless Lois Lane is still around in the book, or the second issue blows me away, you know, takes Lois out of the equation, but the second issue still blows me away, I'm gonna be out. Which is kind of a shame, because Phil Jimenez is a very, very talented creator, but I think he may suffer, because I know a lot of people are Lois Lane fans, and this was marketed as a Lois Lane book, and I think a lot of them, even based on the quality of Phil Jimenez's work, they may see a lot of fans leave and not pick up the book, just because they're going to be upset about being tricked, basically. And so despite any quality or a great story that Phil Jimenez does, and I'm kind of in that boat myself, I totally understand it, I'm going to be out on it. So, I don't know, it's kind of a shame. I wish DC hadn't played up the Lois Lane angle quite so much, you know. They should have just kept it, who is the, you know, Superwoman or whatever, and then it wouldn't, and the fact that it came, you know, it's come out later, toward the end of this first wave of Rebirth books, so it gave even more time for people's anticipation and excitement to kind of, you know, be generated and raise up to another level, and it finally comes out, and, oh, it's the Lois Lane book I've been waiting for, and then, well, maybe not. You know, if they would have released it right off the bat, before expectations got so high, or like I said, if they just had, you know, I mean, I don't know how they could have done it. It would be really hard to, you know, based on the images they released, not to assume it's a Lois Lane book. But I don't know. They're in a tough situation. I love DC, but they really, I think, didn't handle this in the best way. What are your thoughts on Superwoman?
Never really in on Superwoman, so I've been out.
All right. Next up, we have Supergirl, Steve Orlando. The art in the Rebirth issue was by Emanuela Lupacchino. I'm a little curious to read issue one, just to see where it goes next. But just based on what I saw in the Rebirth issue, they're going to be pulling in a lot of things from the TV show, which is understandable and perfectly acceptable, but not my cup of tea, so I'm out on Supergirl.
I like the fact that they're bringing things in from the TV show. I'm not the biggest fan of the show, but I like it. I like to watch it anyway. It's something I like to do with my daughter. This is a book that I can actually share with her also. And so I'm curious to see where they go with it from here. So I'm still in on Supergirl.
All right, next up. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, plus Emanuela's art is awesome. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I don't know that she's going to be the regular artist, though, because I know she left, she was doing Starfire with Jimmy and Amanda when that launched, and she left that book because she didn't, she has a hard time with a monthly. So, I mean, I don't know if she's going to be doing every other issue, or I mean, she is listed as one of the artists on the title, so I imagine she'll at least be doing covers, if not interiors, so. Every other issue, she probably could handle that. So, next up on the list is Trinity, Francis Manapul writing Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. This book actually has not yet come out. Let me see if I can find the release date for issue one really fast. Let's see here. It looks like issue one comes out on September 21st. So that's one we'll. Obviously, we haven't read it yet, so hard to say. But did you know that the... So you know how each book has a like a regular cover artist, and then a certain artist doing the variants.
Yeah.
So the you know like for example, Green Arrow, all the variant covers are by Neil Adams, and I think the Action Comics variants are Clayman. Well, the Trinity variants are Jason Fabok.
Ooh.
So I imagine just based on the covers alone, you may be picking up this book. But I'm excited just to read this and see what the dynamic is that Francis is going to create. So that's obviously a wait and see. Next up is Aquaman, written by Dan Abnett and art by Brad Walker and Philip Baronis. This has been a much more of a political book than I expected. I've been impressed by how current and contemporary Dan Abnett has managed to make this while still keeping it a superhero comic, and it's not like preachy, it doesn't hit you over the head with the political themes of the book, but clearly they're there. It's made for a very interesting read. The art by Brad Walker has been amazing. The Philip Baronis art has been good as well, so I'm definitely in on Aquaman. It's probably my favorite run on Aquaman since the initial New 52 Geoff Johns run.
I like the whole political aspect of the book. It's something that I wanted to see from Aquaman for a while, just because, I mean, it is a very touchy subject. You're from Atlantis and you're from land, so you got to deal with that. And that's one of Aquaman's things he's best known for, with this, the fact that he's torn between two worlds, and this is one of the hardest aspects of it. You got to deal with the politics of Atlantis and the politics of, well, in this case, the United States and the other nations. So I'm not very sold on the artwork. I don't like the way he's drawn at times, especially his suit. But I'm definitely still in on Aquaman.
You don't like the pebble look?
No, I really don't.
Oh, man, I think it's so cool. All right. Next up, we have The Flash, written by Joshua Williamson. Neil Gouge on art, along with Carmine Di Gian Domenico. Not a fan of either artist, really. I prefer Gouge's art to Di Gian Domenico. This one's a tough one, because the more I see of this art, the less I like it. And not to say it's bad, it's just it's not what I prefer. And as much as I'm enjoying the story, I'm maybe getting to the point where the art just makes it, you know, where I don't pick up the book, basically, which is really sad, because Flash has been one of my favorite books ever since the New 52 relaunch, with what Francis and Brian Buccioletto did, followed by Robert Venditti and Van Jensen and the Dream Team on art. So it's a pretty long, unbroken run I have there of picking up the Flash each month. So I'm not, I mean, for now I'm still in. But man, I really would like a different artist on the book. I don't know, I just, something about the art, particularly the backgrounds, I just do not care for it at all. What are your thoughts on Flash?
Yeah, I'm in and out on Flash. I'm not enjoying the story as much as I thought I would, and the artwork isn't very good either, in my opinion. So while I'm still in now, for me, the story needs to pick up a little bit more. I'm not the biggest fan of seeing so many speedsters. I don't know. Maybe it's just a story that's not my cup of tea.
All right. Next up, we have Green Lanterns, written by Sam Humphries, art by Robson Rocha, who just signed a DC exclusive. That's a very good get. The art has been outstanding. The art has been the best thing about the book. Coming in second on that list for me would be Jessica Cruz. I find her to be very interesting. Unfortunately, that's two positives, but there's also two negatives for me. Simon Baz has continued to be an extremely uninteresting character for me, and I don't care for the Red Lanterns as villains. I found them to be very interesting in their own title when Charles Soule took over the book. Kind of gave them some dimension and made them interesting. Sam Humphries has kind of turned them back into kind of these two-dimensional villains where it's just, you know, a bunch of I'm mad and I'm going to destroy things kind of mustache twirling villain. So that's fine, you know, that's his prerogative, but I find that to be much less interesting. And so I think I'm out on Green Lanterns. I mean, the art is really, really good, and it's almost enough to keep me in, but yeah, the story just, it didn't capture my attention. So I'm out on Green Lanterns.
Well, I'm definitely in on Green Lanterns. I love the dynamic between Jessica Cruz and Simon Baz. I find Simon to be a little more interesting than I thought I would. I would like to know a little bit more about his newfound power of Emerald Sight. I thought that was pretty cool. And I'm really enjoying watching Jessica Cruz develop as a character and as a Green Lantern. I'm fine with the Red Lanterns kind of being a little bit two-dimensional at the moment, just because Jessica and Simon need a little bit of time to really develop as a team. And so you not having that strong of a antagonist for me works. And of course the artwork is awesome. So I am still definitely 100% in on Green Lantern.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the dynamic between Jessica and Simon. That's actually something I expected to enjoy a little bit more. Their dynamic hasn't been what I expected it to be. Maybe because Sam Humphries described the book as kind of Lethal Weapon with alien technology. I kind of expected their relationship to be a little more Murton Riggs, and maybe it'll get to that point. It's not there yet. And so while their relationship is interesting, I guess you could say, or developing, it wasn't at a point that it was a positive for me. It's not a negative, but it wasn't necessarily positive. The Emerald Sight that you mentioned, though, is something that's really cool that Humphreys introduced in the book. So I'm glad you're going to keep reading it. You can fill me in on that once some of the answers about that have been forthcoming. Next up, we have Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps. Venditti handling Hal Jordan. Awesome. Hal Jordan is kind of like a one-man corps right now, taking on the Sinestro Corps, the Yellow Lanterns. That's probably the one aspect of the book that I'm not necessarily enjoying. I mean, I think it's good and it makes sense for where the status of Hal Jordan and the whole Green Lantern corner of the DC Universe was going forward. It makes sense that this is the first villain, the first antagonist in the book. Mm-hmm. But I am a little Yellow Lanterned out at this point. But like I said, it makes sense, so I'm totally willing to forgive that. Very interested to see what Venditti does with the rest of the core. I feel like he hasn't touched on them that much in his run, in as much as it's been kind of nonstop, one massive disaster after another. So we know that the core is decimated. It's going to have to be rebuilt. I'm very curious to see how he does that, how he changes things. You know, we've seen that he has no reservations about trying new things and setting up a new status quo for the Green Lanterns going forward, even though they've been around for, you know, 75 plus years in the DC Universe. So yeah, really curious to see where he goes with that. So yeah, in. And the art by Rafa Sandoval has been outstanding as well. I think Ethan Van Sciver works on that book as well. At least he did the Rebirth issue. So yeah, loving that book.
Yeah, I'm definitely still in. I like the way the Rebirth issue set everything up, gave me all the little background details that I may have missed. For example, I didn't read Sinestro, so that helped me fill me in on what was going on. I was reading Green Lantern, and I was following also what the Corps was up to. So overall, I had already invested a little bit of time and energy on this book, and they've done a great job at keeping me interested. So yeah, definitely still in.
Next up, we have Justice League, written by Brian Hitch, artwork by Tony Daniel. The artwork has been pretty damn good. Not the best Tony Daniel artwork I've ever seen. That distinction probably goes to the artwork he did on his Deathstroke series that he was both writing and drawing. Not Deathstroke that launched with the New 52, but when they brought it back the second time in the New 52. And I have a feeling this artwork isn't quite as good just because he's drawing so many more characters. Probably doesn't get a chance to spend as much time. And also the story that's been going on has been so epic. The backgrounds, you know, world-spanning disasters and such. So I'm sure that's taken a lot of time as well. That being said, while the story is interesting, the dialogue, the pacing haven't been up to par for me. You know, Brian Hitch is much more known as an incredible artist, more so than a writer. And for me, it's just the writing is not strong enough here, which is really too bad because, you know, Justice League should be a flagship book. It should be a book I'm excited about. Should be a book that's epic. It's a book that DC managed to keep Geoff Johns on through the entire New 52. And it was exactly that. It was epic. It did feel important. It did feel integral to the universe. And although some storylines, much like the Scott Snyder Batman run, some storylines may have seemed like they dragged on a little bit, particularly the Darkseid War, it still felt important. It still felt like it mattered. The storyline so far in the first couple issues has, you know, like I said, it's kind of an interesting idea, but it doesn't feel like it's integrated in the universe. It doesn't feel like it matters. It just feels like it's kind of a self-contained, you know, probably 4, 5, 6 issue story that's going to be like you read it and then you forget about it. It's not memorable. It's not going to have lasting impact. And frankly, I'm just not going to waste my time with it. The story and the writing, the dialogue, the pacing, all of it, it's just not good enough for me to waste my time on it. Just, it's sad to say.
Justice League is a book that I really wanted to love just because of the entire runs that have been done through the New 52. I really enjoyed Justice League. You're right. It should be one of the flagship books, but man, I'm having a hard time getting into this one. I like the fact that we have the now current Superman on the team, a little bit reluctant. Same thing with having Jessica and Simon on the team, but I'm not very interested in this story. So as for right now, I'm actually out.
Wow. Both of us out on Justice League. That should say something to DC right there.
Too hard. That's just weird.
Yeah, two hardcore DC fans, and we're out on what should be one of their biggest titles. Sad. All right, next up we have Titans, written by Dan Abnett, and the Dream Team on art. I could say just based on who the art team is, you know, Brett Booth, Norm Ratman, Andrew Dahlhouse, I'm in. Throw in Dan Abnett, throw in the fact that this is Wally West, the book he's going to be in, exploring how the rebirth happened, what happened, how did we get here, what's been forgotten, just what the heck exactly is rebirth. I'm in. No, it's a no-brainer.
Oh yeah, that's the team from Flash, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great artwork, and I mean, this is one of the few books that's going to explain to us what the heck's going on. So yeah, definitely in. Plus it has Nightwing on it and also Wonder Girl, so
yeah, awesome book. Next up is Cyborg. This is another book that hasn't come out yet, but I think actually this one comes out next week. Let me double check that. So John Semper is going to be the writer, and I'm not 100% sure who the artist is. Is it Will Conrad, maybe? Let me check real fast. Yeah, Will Conrad on art. So based on my conversations with John Semper at WonderCon in San Diego, I'm very much looking forward to this book. But, you know, until we actually read it, it's hard to say. So this is obviously a wait and see. Is this one you're looking forward to?
Not really. I wasn't really blown away by what they did during the DCU when they released that Cyborg. I gave it a couple of issues and really lost interest. So my level of interest in this one is not very high. But it's not to say that I won't pick up the first two issues to check it out. You never know. It may change my mind. But for now, not in.
Yeah, I feel that way about the next title, which is Teen Titans. If it has anything going for it, it's that the art's going to be by John Boy Myers. But if it has anything going against it, it would be one Damian Wayne, who I have gone on record many times as saying I am not a fan of, not even a little bit. So it's Damian Wayne attempting to take over the leadership of the Teen Titans. You know, just like you with Cyborg, I'll pick up the first issue. Ben Percy is the writer, and I do feel like he's a good writer, but man, I just can't get over my dislike of Damian Wayne. So I'll pick up the first issue, the Rebirth issue, probably issue one, unless I find the Rebirth issue to be intolerable. And based on that, I'll make my decision. But I mean, it's kind of crappy because other than Damian, I like the other characters in the book. I like what's been done with Starfire. I like what they've done with Beast Boy recently. It's going to also have the newest version of Raven in it, as well as the new 52 Wally West, the African-American version, who, you know, I'd like to learn more about. So I'm interested in all those characters, but for me, Damian Wayne in the book makes it unreadable. Unless Ben Percy finds a way to make it where I don't dislike him so much, but I think to do that, he would have to act so far out of character of what we've seen so far that it wouldn't be Damian Wayne. So, very curious. Very curious about that one. What are your thoughts on Teen Titans?
Yeah, until they prove me otherwise, I'm in on Teen Titans. Unlike you, I really like Damian Wayne. So, to see him in the group really interests me.
All right, next up is Justice League of America. Can't say whether I'm in or out on this book because they haven't even announced a creative team or a date. Nothing's solicited. We know that based on the success of Rebirth so far, that this one, along with Super Sons, have kind of been pushed back. Dan Didio has said basically they're not in no hurry. They don't want to rush too many things out too quickly. They want everything to have a chance to succeed. So they're, you know, it's going to be a slow rollout. And Justice League of America, along with Super Sons, any Legion of Superhero, as well as any Justice Society titles, they're all looking at 2017 at the earliest. Next up, we have Green Arrow. Next to Wonder Woman, this has been my favorite title. This book has been so good. It puts a smile on my face how good it's been. Ben Oliver absolutely killing it with the storyline. Otto Schmidt and Juan Ferreira on art. Cinematic, epic, amazing. Again, not the clean style I prefer, and that just goes to show how amazing the art has been. It's, even though it's art that's not in the style I prefer, it is just awesome. It blows me away every time. The layouts, the feel, the impact of the images, absolutely amazing. Just absolutely love what Ben Oliver has been doing. Yeah, I'm definitely in on Green Arrow. Are you even caught up on Green Arrow?
Nope, not at all.
So you're out then.
Well, no, I'm not in yet either, but I haven't read them. So I got to actually sit down, take some time and read them. But I mean, if it's so good, as good as you say it is, I'm sure I'm in.
I keep telling you though, but and you still haven't read it. Like,
I mean, the problem is that the week has 7 days, and by the time I want to sit down and read it, I got a new pile of books that I need to look through, and it keeps getting pushed back and pushed back, and then the new issue comes out, and that just it sits on top of the pile of it. So maybe this weekend, now that I have a tablet, it makes it a little bit easier for me to read books on the go.
I'm not going to hook you up with any more advanced copies of anything until you get caught up on Green Arrow.
Well, damn.
You'll be caught up before you know it. All right, next up we have Deathstroke, Christopher Priest, and Carlo Pagulian on art. The art has been absolutely outstanding, super detailed. The story so far has been typical Priest in that there's a lot of layers, very complicated. We've had two issues come out so far, the Rebirth issue one. I'm still a little confused. I'm sure once the story gets rolling along a little more, things will become more clear. And that's just a hallmark of Priest books. We've kind of been thrown into the middle here of the story, and he's using flashback to establish what's gone on in the past and who Deathstroke is in this kind of new version. So I'm definitely in. I have a feeling, much like his Black Panther run, people are going to look back on this Deathstroke run as a seminal work and a must read for Deathstroke fans.
I was never quite in on this book. I always thought that maybe this would be one of the first ones to get canned. Not that I'm wishing that on any of these books, because I know that creative teams work really hard on them. But I don't have too much of an interest on Deathstroke, even now with the appearance announcement that he was going to be in Justice League and the main villain in the Batman film. I'm still not that interested in the character. I think he's cool. I think he's great. Just a book about him, not that interested. So I'm still out on Deathstroke.
All right, next up we have Harley Quinn, Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor, Chad Harden, John Timms, Alex Sinclair, who's who of DC talent right there. That being said, I'm out. I'm out on Harley Quinn. I guess I could put it this way. I'm Harley Quinned out at this point. I mean, Margot Robbie did an incredible job in Suicide Squad. But honestly, I was kind of burnt out on Harley even before that. And I think some of this stems from the fact that when I did... for our YouTube channel, when I did the history of Harley Quinn and read every single Harley Quinn appearance, all 200 plus issues up until that point in the DC universe, you know, it took me a month to get through all that, and it was much more daunting and much more of a Herculean task than I expected. And it's kind of like, you know, when you, I don't know, have like a root beer drinking contest or a cherry pie eating contest, and you have so much of this one thing, you just get sick of it. So I was never the hugest Harley Quinn fan to begin with, binging on all that stuff, I've had enough of Harley Quinn to last me a good long while.
Oh, come on. I can never get enough Harley Quinn. Especially if it's written by Jimmy and Amanda and you have Chad Harden on artwork. That's all I need. I've always noticed that they don't go too far on some stories as far as if making them too big. She's always dealing with more like internal problems within her family and friends within that circle. But Jimmy and Amanda, every issue entertained the heck out of me. And that's really what I'm looking at for that Harley book. So I'm still in. Definitely still in.
All right. Next up, we have The Hellblazer. Obviously, that's Sean Constantine. This was a book I was never really in on. We've seen two issues come out so far, the Rebirth issue and issue number one. I enjoyed issue number one more than I expected. based on what I read in the Rebirth issue, I expected to dislike it because I disliked the Rebirth issue. I thought issue one was a lot better, especially enjoyed seeing Swamp Thing make an appearance. That being said, I did not enjoy it enough that I'm going to keep reading it. The art by Moritat, again, in contrast to how I felt about the writing and the story in the first two issues, I enjoyed the art in the Rebirth issue more than the story. In this issue one, I enjoyed the story more than the art. So kind of flip-flopped for me there. But yeah, I'm out on Hellblazer. It's just Constantine's never been a character that I've really enjoyed that much. Even in Justice League Dark, I just kind of tolerated him. Just for whatever reason. I feel like I should like him. He's an anti-hero. He's kind of a jerk. But I don't know. He's just never been somebody that's been that interesting to me. I guess maybe because he's so unrelatable to me, I guess. Which I'm sure a lot of people who know me would say, well, I'm kind of a jerk too, so I should relate to him on that level. But I don't. So there you have it. You liked the Rebirth issue, right? So where are you at with this one?
Not sure. I think for now I'm still in, but it's kind of more of a wait and see book.
Wait and see for the first arc, wait and see for the next issue, like how...
I really want to give it a shot, but I feel like the first issue I liked it more because of Swamp Thing making an appearance than actually John Constantine. I'm interested in his character, but based on what I've seen... I haven't seen too much, but I still want to give it one or two more issues to see how it develops and see if it's his supporting characters are the ones that are keeping me in, or if it's just gonna be one that I'm out altogether.
All right, fair enough. And how come I'm drawing a blank on who's writing? Is it Simon Oliver that's writing that one?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, we have Red Hood and the Outlaws. This one, I've gone on record as saying the Rebirth issue, written by Scott Lobdell. Best thing I've ever read from Scott Lobdell. Best thing he's ever written. Absolutely blew me away. Seeing the dynamic and the relationship, the beginning of the relationship between Bruce Wayne, Batman, and Jason Todd Red Hood was awesome. So good. I did not quite enjoy the first issue as much, but being that there's only been two issues, we haven't actually gotten the team together, the Outlaws together. We haven't seen Bizarro make his appearance yet. I'm still in. I liked the way the first issue ended. I'm very curious to see where it goes from here. The artwork by Dexter Soy, I'm enjoying it. At times, there are panels and pages, certain pages that where I feel his art is outstanding. There are other times where it looks a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Not unfinished, but just not, it's not polished enough. You know, I think, he's a relatively new artist to the big two. I'm not sure how much experience he has before coming to this book. So, hopefully we'll see some progression and see his art, kind of improve and have a little more consistency. But yeah, I'm in on Red Hood and the Outlaws.
I'm not caught up on Red Hood and the Outlaws. And to be honest with you, not the most interested in that group. So I guess that's safe to say that I'm out.
You just read the Rebirth and that was it?
Actually, I haven't even read that.
Oh, wow. You should. Being a Batman fan, you'd enjoy it. I don't think you reading that. I think if you read that Rebirth issue and then read the first issue, the tone is so different between the first two, you'd probably still be out. You'd be like, I'm even more out now because you're not a big Red Hood fan. But yeah, that Rebirth issue is definitely worth reading. It's really, really done well. Next up, we have Suicide Squad. Jim Lee, Philip Tan on art. Rob Williams is the writer. We've had the Rebirth issue and issue one, which are completely different. You know, they're not connected to each other in any way as far as like the storyline or plot. Just some of the same characters. It was very interesting to read. I mean, the first issue, the Rebirth issue, was kind of a standalone, and I thought it was done well. The art was really cool. It really gives you an idea of who the Suicide Squad is and what they're willing to do to complete their missions, and a good introduction to Amanda Waller as the head of the squad. The first issue was kind of like, okay, now that you have an idea of what the Suicide Squad is, now look at how much it ties in with the movie. That's what the first issue did. So it was, I feel like almost it was a throwaway issue. You know, I wanted more. It didn't seem like that much happened. And that's also partially because DC decided, in order to help Jim Lee keep on schedule, that they were going to only do like a 20-page story, I think it is. Or maybe, is it 12? Yeah, it's a 12-page, I think. And then the 8-page backup. And that gives you your full 20-page story. So I thought the backup was outstanding, the Deadshot backup, not least of which because Jason Fabok did the art. So that was really awesome. So I would say just based on the backups and knowing that it's going to be like a superstar rotating artist telling the backstories of the history of the characters, that I would be in just for that alone. But I also trust Rob Williams enough that I want to see how the main story progresses as well. It's Jim Lee art, so you know there's not really much that needs to be said there. But I will say this, it's less, I felt the art was less cinematic than I've seen from Jim Lee in a long time, which I find interesting. And I think part of it might have been the fact that because he knew he was doing fewer pages, because they've kind of divided the book up, that he didn't want to use too many big splash pages and spread out his art like was done in Superman Unchained and his work on Justice League, because then he probably would have had a harder time fitting the story into the fewer amount of pages, you know what I mean? And it would have made an even faster read. And so I feel like, you know, using smaller panels, it allowed them to fit more story into the fewer amount of pages that they did. So I'm still in on Suicide Squad for now. But I hope that it picks up a little. The pacing on this was very slow. And there wasn't much new information for me, you know, having seen the movie and been, you know, very familiar with who the Suicide Squad are. But I think that anybody who saw the movie and who was not familiar with Suicide Squad, they picked this up, and it's a really good bridge between what they saw on the big screen and the Suicide Squad that appears in the comic pages. So I'm totally okay with DC doing that for the first few issues. I'm willing to stick it out to see where it goes from here. What were your thoughts on Suicide Squad?
You know, I felt like the Rebirth issue and then the issue number one, it almost repeated itself a little bit. The book that actually came out this week, that's really more what I was expecting out of the first one. Just let's go, let's get into action. That's actually also what I expected out of the movie, to have something like a mission going to the Netherlands and saving a politician or something like that. Something a little bit more grounded with Amanda Waller at the controls. With that being said, the Rebirth issue was pretty good. The backstories, like you were saying, were definitely good, especially with Jason Fabok doing the artwork on those. So for now I'm in, but I would like to see a little bit better pacing with the story going forward.
Yeah, just again, I think, you know, with the fewer pages dedicated to the main story, I think pacing may be a problem the whole time. So I guess we'll see. Next up we have Blue Beetle. This one is written by Keith Giffen, art by Scott Collins. We've had the Rebirth issue, and that's it. So hard to say. Jury's still out on this one for me. I'm going to give it a couple more issues. I'm a fan of Ted Kord Blue Beetle. I'm not a fan of Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle. So that being said, I thought Keith Giffen did a good job of giving both characters plenty of time in the book. So it's a wait and see for me on this one. What about you?
Man, I really wanted to like the Rebirth issue because I really want this book to succeed. Oh, with that being said, I just wish that the Rebirth title would have been a little bit more like the Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern's Rebirth title.
Agreed.
Because I don't know too much about the first Blue Beetle. And what I do know about Reyes is from based off of the animated series that he's appeared. So I would have loved a little bit more background and setting me up for the books going forward. So with that being said, I'm going to give it a few more issues because I really want to like this book.
All right, sounds good. Next up, we have Batman Beyond, written by Dan Jurgens, art by Bernard Chang. This is Terry McGinnis returning to the Batman Beyond role or title or however you want to say it. So this one hasn't come out yet. I'm definitely curious to know how they're going to bring Terry McGinnis back. It's Dan Jurgens. It's Bernard Chang. I'm in, but only up to a certain point. I'm not the hugest Batman Beyond fan. So, but I have been reading the current title. I've enjoyed it. So, mainly I want to know how they're going to bring back Terry McGinnis. Very interested for that. And it's we still have a ways to go before this one comes out. It doesn't come out till September 28th. So, you are a Batman Beyond fan. So, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I'm definitely in. I like the what they did during the New 52. Actually, no, it was during the DCU. I'm in for now. But yeah, I definitely want to know how they bring back Terry McGinnis because in my book, he is the one and only Batman Beyond. So I guess I got to wait till September 28th.
Yep.
And I'm sure we're going to be telling ourselves, there's still Rebirth titles coming out.
Yep.
So...
All right, yeah. The last book is Super Sons, which we mentioned before already. No release date set for that one yet. So this one, for me, though, is weird because as much as I love Jonathan Kent so far, I dislike Damian Wayne. So I guess it's all going to come down to is my love for Jonathan Kent greater than my dislike for Damian Wayne? And that may determine... if I pick up the book or not, or it may come down to the fact that those things are equal. And so it'll purely be based on story and art. If it's Jorge Jimenez on art, I'll probably have to pick it up regardless.
I'm really looking forward to this because I really enjoy Jonathan in Superman and in action, mainly in Superman, but really enjoyed his character. And I like Damian. So I really want to see them interact together. So, I am in on this one. Very excited about this one.
Right on. So that brings everybody up to speed on where we're at with the DC Rebirth titles. Let us know which books you think you're going to be keeping up on and are worth the time and money to be read, and which ones you think aren't. Very curious to know, especially if you disagree with us. Tell us why, and maybe you can change our minds. Let's talk a little bit about some books we read recently. So what do you want to talk about first? Generation Zero?
Yeah, let's switch it up to some Valiant.
Oh, man. I love me some Fred Van Lente.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you there.
This book, I mean, when I first heard about it, I'm like, okay, Fred Van Lente, and, you know, he's going to be writing the Gen Zero kids. I'm in, you know, the whole A-Team vibe. If you have a problem, no one else can help, and if you can find them... Yeah, I was like, man, this sounds like really, really cool. That being said, totally blew me away, exceeded my expectations, was so, so good. I love Francis Portella art. Ever since his work on the Legion of Superheroes for DC, I've loved his art. I thought he was a perfect choice for the book. Loved. I mean, the main character, Keisha, is not generally a character that I would really find that interesting. You know, the whole punk goth kind of thing, you know, those kind of characters, usually I can't relate to them, you know, kind of a turn off, whatever. Even so, the situation she's in, the town that he's established, the background, the supporting characters, man, it's so, everything got established so quickly. It felt like there was so much in this issue. We got the feel of the town. Just thought it was a masterwork, man. It was so good. I finished the first issue. I was like, I cannot wait for the next one. They've released some preview pages from issue 2, and I already read those. Like, normally I don't read preview pages. You know, I may glance at the artwork a little bit, but man, I wanted the book so bad. I was like, well, I'm going to go check out these preview pages and get a little more, hint about what's coming up. It's how badly I want to read the next issue. So yeah, it was just amazing. Again, issue 2 doesn't come out till September 28th. So we have quite a ways to wait. Maybe I'll get on the phone to Dinesh and have him send me issue 2 early. What were your thoughts?
Just like you were saying about all the information we get in issue 1, I thought that it was really clever how Fred Van Lente gave us just enough information to set up the story, but at the same time, leave me very curious about more background on the story, on some of the characters, and really having me super pumped for issue 2. I found it to be a very good book, and I can't wait to the second one. I really want to see the team actually in action. I thought the goons, I guess you can call them, were pretty cool, having them look something in between the Red Hood, the Capullo Red Hood, and Slender Man. I thought those were pretty cool. Weapons were kind of weird. So it was just solid. Really good writing.
Yeah, I love the voice that Van Lente has given the kids, the Gen Zero kids. It's a different kind of voice than we've seen them have from Joshua Dysart, who's written them previously, but it still felt authentic, particularly Christian Kronos. I have a feeling that that this could be a big hit. And I hope so, because Valiant certainly deserves all the attention and praise it's been getting for its work in the comic industry so far. So hopefully this book will do really well for them. Another book I read recently that I had been looking forward to for a long time, written by Greg Pak, art by Mirko Kolak, is Kingsway West. So this is kind of an alternate history Western, where it's not just the Old West, the Wild West, but it's mixed in with magic, kind of dark magic. The artwork in the first issue, again, even though it's not my favorite style of art, it's not quite as clean as I prefer. The storytelling is solid, and the rendering is really good. A lot of emotion, very much a visceral feel. Lots of panels where I was like, whoa, that's brutal. You know, guy getting his eyeball shot out by a six shooter, another guy's head basically exploding from being shot at close range with a gun. Just like brutal stuff, but really cool, really impactful imagery. The story itself, very interesting to me. I love the setting, love the world. Not sure if it's a mini or if it's an ongoing. It may be that they're not even, Dark Horse is the publisher, maybe that they're not even sure. I had interviewed Greg Pak about this book at San Diego 2015, and it was actually supposed to come out, I think, September or October of last year. Got pushed back, not sure why, don't know that we found out the reason for that. But I've been looking forward to this book for a long time, and it did live up to my expectations. If I had any nitpick about it, it's that it jumps around, it jumps forward a couple times in the book, and so that's what makes me wonder if Greg Pak has a limited amount of issues to tell the story he wants to tell, and he wants to be sure that even if the sales don't dictate, that he can at least get through that first arc. But it did make things a little confusing. a couple of times. I'm not 100% sure. Probably go back and reread it. It might make a little more sense, or it may be that I'll just wait, and some of those gaps or some of the questions I have may be filled in with some more flashback in future issues, in which case this may be one that reads better as a trade. But I definitely recommend it. I believe it's sold out at Diamond. So if you want to check it out, you know, go pick it up at your local comic shop and definitely pre-order. I mean, Greg Pak was pushing this for pre-orders way back before it got delayed. And so I don't know if the delay lessened the orders that people, the comic shops ordered initially, or what exactly, but it's definitely a book that is worth picking up. It's, as I said, it's gotten a lot of positive buzz based on the first issue, and very good, not just fan response with the sellout, but also a lot of critical, critical reviews. Did you have a chance to read it?
No, not yet.
All right.
But based on what you said, I'm definitely going to be reading it in the next couple of days.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Are you caught up on ROM?
No, I've only read the first issue.
Yeah, first issue was solid. I find myself comparing, you know, kind of hard not to compare it to the original ROM series just because, you know, I'm such a huge fan of it. This doesn't, it's kind of weird. This one has more of a, the wraiths in this ROM series have more of a, they seem more threatening. They seem more of a menace. The old ROM series, the original ROM series from Marvel had, I mean, maybe it's because it's a product of its time. It has a bit of charm to it. It's a bit of a, yeah, it's almost a difference between like watching an old classic horror movie like Dracula or the Wolfman or Frankenstein. And it just has that sense of history and that says it's good. It's a classic, you know, it has all the, everything it needs to be a good story and everything versus seeing, you know, a horror movie made today where it's much more visceral. It's much more high octane. It's much more in your face. And I feel like that's the difference so far. Not to say one is better than the other, but I'm really enjoying the series so far. Two issues have come out. I'm especially interested for everything that's happened so far. We really haven't learned that much necessarily about Rom himself, but I'm sure if you went back and read just the first two issues of the Marvel series, the classic Marvel series, you'd kind of feel the same way. So I'm very interested to learn more about Rom as a character, as opposed to just this warrior, this fighter that he's been so far. But man, it has been so, so good. The art by David Messina is amazing. I love the changes, the giving him fingers, the weapons incorporated into the armor, the supporting cast. Like I said, the menace of the ROM, or the menace of the Wraith threat. It's tying into the IDW Revolution event, but I don't feel pressured to read that event. The crossover with the Micronauts and G.I. Joe and Transformers, I don't feel the need. I may pick it up anyway, just because I'm curious. But I think if you're not interested in that, just read ROM and you'll have no problem. It doesn't overwhelm the story. We just, in the first couple of ROM issues, we've just seen some of the G.I. Joe characters show up a little bit and that's it. They don't take over the story in any way, shape or form. It's been really, really good. Next thing I want to mention is Axiom, which is an original graphic novel that was released by Legendary Comics. Came out not today, but last Wednesday. Written by Mark Wade. Art by Ed Benes. I don't think it came out in comic shops. I didn't see it at any of my local stores. I actually ended up ordering it on Amazon. I think you can also get it digitally. It really stinks. I ordered the book, and it comes 2 days later from Amazon, and the freaking mailman, it just came in a regular brown envelope, didn't say do not bend or whatever. He folds it in half and sticks it in my mailbox.
Oh!
I was like, what the heck? I was so furious. And then it's not an actual Amazon item, so I can't just like get another one sent. I would have to send that one back and wait.
Oh no.
And it's not like creased or anything. So I just kind of tried to flatten it out as best I could. And I read like the first half of it. And then I had to go run an errand or whatever. And then I like stuck it under like four long boxes to kind of flatten it out. And then I got home late that night and like didn't, you know, wasn't, I needed to go to sleep. Wasn't going to, you know, read the rest of it then. And then honestly, I kind of forgot about it. And because it's stacked under those boxes and I didn't want to unsack them and take it out. So I haven't finished it. So I read like the first half and I thought it was really, really good, but didn't get a chance to finish it. So I have the day off from work tomorrow. So that's definitely on my list of things to do. Now you read the whole thing and you got to interview Mark Waid about it. So you'll have to tell us about that. But the one thing I want to mention is, as far as the story goes, it's kind of like What If Superman Went Bad, which if you're a Mark Waid fan, seems like he's already told that story with Irredeemable. That being said, you know, this is a self-contained story, 144-page story, as opposed to Irredeemable, which was like 30 or 31 issues, I think. And there are some similarities, but I think it's different enough. And the Ed Bennis artwork is really good. But as far as do I think it's better than Irredeemable or different, you know, how different, whatever, I really couldn't say because I haven't finished it yet. But based on what I've read so far, I would recommend picking it up. And of course, I recommend Irredeemable, which I keep promising we're going to cover that in a spotlight, and we will. We will one of these days. So what are your thoughts on Axiom and talking to Mark Waid about it?
Axiom was really good. Some of the aspects of the story I thought I was going to find repetitive, kind of like you were saying that the story seems like he's already told a story just like that. And then also the suit that they come up with that you see on the back cover of the book, it kind of looks like an Iron Man suit. It also reminded me of Batman's armor when he fights Superman in The Dark Knight Returns. I didn't really know what to expect, but going through the book, it was really interesting to see the development of how Axiom goes bad, the things that humanity does to him to get him to that level, because when him and his wife go to Earth, you know, they the first thing they do is cure cancer. That was their olive branch they extended to humanity, and they accepted it. But certain things of the worst in people came out, and at the end of the day, it drove Axiom mad, especially with some of the things that happened in the middle. And so I really enjoyed it, and it leaves the door open for something in the future if they want to do it.
Yeah. Now, did you, when you talked to Mark Waid, did you ask him about the differences and similarities between that and Irredeemable?
Yeah, he was telling me that Irredeemable is based more of a story of what happens if a superhero is raised by the wrong people, while Axiom is what happens when what's the word I'm looking for? When humanity drives you mad and takes you to the dark side. So it's, yeah, it's a hero's going bad, but the way they get there is a whole, it's very different.
Yeah.
And it kind of gets you thinking about just the way people are, especially the media, and just a very solid story, and it doesn't rush to anything, And I really enjoyed it. The narrative was really good.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I feel like, in a way, the Plutonian, who's the main character in Irredeemable, is kind of, he's flawed from the beginning. He's kind of doomed to, you know, he's kind of like a ticking time bomb right from the start. Maybe you don't see it, but the longer things go on, the more cracks start to appear. Whereas I think Axiom, like, really is a good being in the beginning, and it's, yeah, it's human nature and the effects that human nature have on him and the expectations that are placed on him that eventually kind of push him over to a place where he feels like the ends justify the means. So, so very interesting. You haven't read all of Irredeemable, have you?
No, not yet. I think I'm only like 15 issues in.
Yeah. So good. So good.
The thing with Axiom too is, and you know he's good because he goes through a pretty bad tragedy in the book, and he's still trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
But people just keep pushing his buttons, yeah. And eventually it sends him over the edge.
Yeah. Last book I want to mention is Eclipse. Mm-hmm. Top Cow. Zach Kaplan is the writer. Can't think of who the artist is off the top of my head. Let me see if I can find it real fast. This is another one that hasn't come out yet. I think, does it come out on the 7th?
Next week.
Yeah, so it comes out on the 7th. Now this book, when I first heard about it, I think it might have been Comic-Con last year, 2015, that they first mentioned, I first heard it mentioned at the Top Cow panel. And right away, I was like, wow, that sounds like a really cool idea for a story. Giovanni Timpano is the artist, T-I-M-P-A-N-O. But I just knew, like, the bare facts. Like, basically, there's some kind of natural disaster that happens. The sun becomes, like, too powerful for humans to be able to be out in. You know, life changes. Humans basically become nocturnal. They only come out at night. Otherwise, they're, you know, trapped underground. I didn't expect kind of the mystery aspect of the story so far. I didn't expect the book to be so messy. And by that, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, right from the start of the story, things start happening, and it's not, it feels like a runaway freight train. It feels like things are things are happening, events are happening, and they're out of control of the characters in the story, and they're just it's humans in a very harsh environment, in unexpected situations, just trying to survive, do the best they can. So it's very compelling in that way. It comes out this next Wednesday, September 7th. I urge you to go and pick it up. I mean, it is a smaller title, so hopefully your local comic shop picked it up. If not, ask them to order you a copy. It's still available from Diamond at this point. So, I mean, you might even be able to go in, today or call and see if your shop can order you a copy, get it added on to their shipment for next week. And also, I want to mention that Zach Kaplan is going to be at Long Beach Comic Con coming up September 17th and 18th. Manny and I will both be there, and we're certainly hoping to be able to sit down and talk to him about this incredible story.
Yeah, it was really good. I guess that's the best way you can describe it, is messy. Just because they're in a really, really bad situation where they have to be underground or else they'll die because the sun's too hot. And with the death that they discover, and with somebody killing people off, and then there's the rumor that somebody is out there that can actually either has a suit to protect them from the sun, or they have some natural ability that
image, man, on the last page of that guy standing out there, he looks like he's unprotected. That was a powerful, I was like, ooh, that looks bad.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was one of the best parts of the book. So, yeah, definitely a very, very good story. Very different than anything that's out there right now. So I think that's another reason why it really caught my attention. And I'm glad that it was brought to my attention thanks to Dylan over at Top Cow. And so it sucks because it comes out next week and I'm already looking forward to issue two.
Yeah, the other part of the book that I really enjoyed was the scene with the mirrors.
Oh, yeah, I thought that was very clever.
Yeah, one thing for direct sun, but then oh, if you reflect the sun at somebody with a mirror, that's powerful enough. I was reading, because we got a digital advanced copy, and I'm reading it, and that happened, and I'm just like, oh, crap! That was awesome. Yeah, very, very well done. I can't wait to sit down and talk to Zach Kaplan about where he came up with the idea for the book and such.
Yeah, I was in my office when I was reading that panel, looking at it, and I had the same reaction. God, I was like, dude, and I kind of started to geek out and explain the book, and yeah, solid. And the artwork really complements the world that they are living in. So I thought that was good, and I definitely recommend people pick this up, and I back it.
Yeah, any other books you've read recently you want to mention?
Just today I read Postal 14 and also Eden's Fall number 1. That is going to be crazy.
Yeah, Eden's Fall, that's kind of tying all the Matt Hawkins verse books together. So Think Tank, Tithe, and Postal, which is now written by Brian Edward Hill. Matt Hawkins and Brian Edward Hill were co-writing the book to start, and now Brian's kind of taking it on all on his own with Matt's blessing. So I'm a couple issues behind on Postal, so I want to get caught up before I read Eden's Fall number 1, but I definitely plan on doing that real soon. Because I have a feeling, I'm such a huge fan of Matt Hawkins that I'm going to read the first issue and be blown away.
Yeah, the thing I really enjoy about Postal, more than even Think Tank and the Tide, is that I can't necessarily predict where the book is going. They do such a really good job at misdirection and bringing in other aspects of Eden or just the characters themselves that you would have never thought of. So it keeps you on your toes. It keeps you excited. And this is no different. Not going to give you anything away. You're not even there yet. But yeah, the end of the first Eden's Fall, I was very surprised. And I am looking forward to the second one. And then obviously the Postal 14, it's really starting to hype you up for some bad things that are coming. Of course, issue 13 is probably the best issue of Postal that's been written to date. It's such a powerful book.
I think the last issue I read was 11, so I'm a few issues behind.
I mean, even 12, which is the closing arc for the first part, is insane. The last few pages of that book, Mark really starts to show some of his father, some of his mother. You see that mix of both of them and some of the decisions he makes, some of the actions he takes. It's so good. But I mean, it just keeps getting better. It's different. And I recommend this book highly to everyone.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. Once again, we'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Please visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com for past episodes of the podcast. You can also watch episodes of our YouTube channel there, as well as finding Manny's written blog and my written blog, and of course our sketch gallery. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date on new episodes and convention coverage. I think the next convention we're going to be at is going to be Long Beach Comic Con in Long Beach, California, September 17th and 18th. Manny and I in the same place at the same time.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. In fact, I can't even remember. I guess it was WonderCon?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you have it. We're also going to have some exciting news that we'll announce at a later date, a way to reach more listeners, kind of expand our presence on the incredible World Wide Web, and hopefully it'll lead to bigger and better things for the Comic Source. So thanks a lot, everybody. Keep listening. We'll talk to you next time.